This week's Friday interview is with the man Muhammad Ali couldn't knock out, Joe Bugner. Let me tell you, if I could fight, this would be one man I would love to knock out. Confident, cocky, arrogant, you take your pick. Joe was British and European heavyweight boxing champion, briefly held a world title too. He's now in his early 60s. His life is extraordinary, so is his attitude. From being a refugee from Hungary to learning to fight to how he feels he's been treated by the boxing establishment and the British press. He just so happens in this interview to tell me on a number of occasions that he's the greatest thing alive and I'm an absolute nobody. But sure, that's it. Another matter. He moved to Australia some years ago. He's now written a book about life in and out of the ring. I began by asking him about his early life.
Being raised by a single parent and having four other siblings in the family, I tended to be a bit of a loner. And I must say that I found my own company very, very much more interesting than sharing it with my siblings. So in reality, what I'm saying to you is that being alone meant a great deal to me, and maybe this is why the reality of becoming the world heavyweight champion came about.
Why did you not like your siblings?
Well, because they were boring. Now, and you know, this is as honest as I can be. I mean, I can go into details. I had two sisters and two brothers, and they were all. The one sister was younger, but the others were all older by a number of years. So there was nothing in common as such because, as I said, we were very needy. We had no money. We were refugees from Hungary in 1956. So you can understand not being able to speak the language and my mother working almost 24 hours a day, looking after her children plus working. It was not easy. So seeing her struggling so much, what can I tell you? I mean, I found my own entertainment.
Which was what?
Walking the streets. No, I'm not joking. Walking the streets, fantasizing about James Bond, Hercules, you know, Steve Reeves, the old Hercules. And because of these great characters I'm talking about, I became the youngest Guinness Book of Records holder for the discus. I mean, I threw the discus at the age of 14 and a half, 15, 56.4 meters. I mean, to me, to be able to achieve that kind of thing because of my determination and the Duke of Edinburgh actually presenting me with the trophy was quite phenomenal because, you know, things like that don't register.
You spent 3.5 years in refugee camps. What was it like in there?
Well, I've got to be honest with you again. I mean, thank God I had my own intelligence and I had my own dreams within myself. I mean, the refugee camps were... Well, I suppose like most refugee camps, you know, there would be about 20 or 30 people in one room sleeping on double-decker beds. So, I mean, excuse my terminology, but you can imagine the filth and the disgust that was going on in there. So, as a child, you know, my mother had her own little tiny section of this big, huge room with other beds. So there was no privacy. And I think what had happened, I think it sort of... Mentally, it done a lot of good for me in a sense that I just did not want to associate with a lot of these people, you know, who, well, you know, I can't even go into details because, I mean, in reality, they were just awful. I mean, absolutely bloody awful. And as a 6.5, 7-year-old, by the time as we went through the camps,
Can you paint a mental picture of what that refugee camp looked like as you think back now?
You know, the amazing thing about it, and I still feel for the people who are sometimes put into refugee camp, you must understand that you had to get up at a certain time of the morning. You were only allowed to have a shower at a certain time of the day, and you were only allowed... And everything was on a time, because at the end of the day, what mattered was that there were several hundred refugees from Hungary in these camps, and I think they were converted schools or whatever, and... You know, the horrible thing about it was that although they were helping us, in the same breath, they were demoralizing us mentally.
I was going to say, when did you decide to be tough? But I guess that was conditioning you, that you had to stay psychologically tough to survive it, keep your wits about you.
It's amazing you say tough. I mean, I was one of the weakest boys in school. I mean, I remember one time, I'm talking about mentally, you know, I mean, I'm talking about mentally because... When you confront a person of your own age or whoever, it doesn't matter, You either say, look, I'm going to fight with you, or I'm not going to fight. I 90% of the times cried because I didn't want to be associated with stupidity. And sadly, in Hungary, the situation was that you fought for everything you got. And as a young boy of the age of 6.5, 7 by that time, you don't fight for things. You just dream about fantasy world, you know, and all this and that. But, you know, when I grew up, a little bit older mentally I'm talking about, I became a very, very vicious young fella. I'd rather just sort of hurt the person I was fighting. Like, I remember this one time, there was a whole group of young kids in this grassy area in one of the camps, and one of the morons actually said, he said, why don't you two young boys fight each other? And I said, no, I don't want to fight. And I said, yes, you do. And the young boy who came out of the thing just said, well, I'll fight him. I remember I nearly choked him to death, and I was only 6. I nearly choked him to death, and my brother, who at that time was 16, had to pull me off this kid because he was going blue. And this is the stupidity and moronic attitude of people who are restricted in doing certain things, like when they're forced into a situation like refugee camps. So they want to have a bit of fun, so they don't want to kill each other. I mean, they are absolute morons. And that's from the sublime to the ridiculous, by the way.
Where's that anger coming from?
Well, I think it... Do you know what angers me so much? That the British media, not my fans, because I've got several million fans in England, and they still want me back, and they still would love to see me either talk on television or whatever. The media itself chased me out of my beautiful country that gave me the opportunity to become who I am today, the world heavyweight champion. And there's no other white bloke in England who ever done that, including the so-called Henry Cooper. He tried and he miserably failed every bloody time.
This is the sort of attack that Bugner should have set up round about the 9th or 10th round. There's a blood blister now formed underneath Henry's left eye. And there it is. It's over. And Cooper gives him a pat and says, well done, and he's given it to Bugner. He's given it to Joe Bugner, and I find that amazing. He's given it to Joe Bugner.
But what I'm trying to say to you is the fans came to see me every time, and my rage inside is, why would they pick on me? Why did they keep saying, yes, but Joe is an ex-Hungarian refugee, or he might be. And when I represented England in Britain in all my athletic prowesses and all my boxing prowess, it was Joseph Bugner from either Bedford, England, or Cambridgeshire, England. They didn't say, oh, Joe Bugner was from Szeged or Szereg. I mean, what I'm saying, when it pleased them, they said it was Joe Bugner, blah, blah, blah. How, of course, he is British, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, when I do something like beat one of their so-called demigods, I become but Joe Bugner was a refugee. I'm from Hungary, of course, yeah. So I became a second citizen.
It got to you, didn't it?
You better believe it got to me. Because every time, and I've been back about 2.5, 3 years ago to England, and I went back there before Henry Cooper died, the fans at the airport, and I mean, they were just fantastic. I mean, they couldn't believe their eyes that I was actually walking down Heathrow Airport. But what I'm just trying to say is that in the book, you will see that my future lied not in England, unfortunately, because other than Colin Hart, one of the great writers of British newspapers, said, Joe Bugner, we do apologize for our blah, 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 blah. Please come back. We forgive you. What? What do you mean? Forgive me for what? For beating Cooper? For becoming the greatest white heavyweight champion Britain has ever had? And yet, all I'm just merely saying is that, what is the matter with these people? Forgive me for what? I left there because the buggers chased me out. And it's in the book.
What's the worst thing they said about you?
Well, they never accepted me as a British person. I'm talking about the journalists. I'm talking about those morons who write. And because you know the old saying in Britain? The pen is mightier than the sword.
All of these years later, Joe, you've still got a grudge against them. Let it go.
It's easy for you to say, oh, son, you haven't done anything great. All you've done is you've been a very good interviewer. But when you're punished, when you're punished for something you wanted to achieve to make the country better, and you're still punished for it by saying, oh, yeah, but he's still a refugee. I mean, what is the problem? So what? I was raised in England from the age of 7. And the problem of with these people is that they don't, these tossers don't let go. Won't let go. I loved England. I had the most beautiful life in England.
How old are you now?
So, no, I'm 63, going on 64 next year.
Right. So can I ask a question that, I don't know, you might be offended, you might not, but I want to ask it, right? And you can answer it straight. So I understand how boxers need to be confident and need to be sure of themselves. But when you said to me there, you haven't done anything great,
No, you haven't done anything great.
Yeah.
I have.
I know.
The world they say, hang on, no. When you win the world heavyweight title, as an athlete, you can't go any better or higher. I said, you haven't achieved anything great because you are just an interviewer. You're the commentator for a radio station.
Yeah, and
all I said to you was that I had achieved the ultimate height of my sport, and yet the buggers still refuse to accept. When I went back 2.5 years ago and I did that Channel 10 interview with Cooper and the interviewer and a few other people there, you know, all they kept harping on about is Australia. Not that the fact that I was the British person, because, I mean, I thought Australia was still part of England.
And here's the question I want to ask you, right? When you get into your later years and you're saying to me and to others, you know, but you're saying it to me, you know, Stephen, you haven't done anything great. Is that the old boxer and that cockiness that you need, or is that an arrogance, Joe? Is it?
You're 100% correct. That is an arrogance that I learned over the years by being continuously knocked down and I get up. Knocked down and I get
but
up.
But do you genuinely...
You must understand.
Do you genuinely think you're better than other people? Or is that the boxer in you?
No, that's what I'm going to try and tell you. Stephen, you've got to understand one thing. When I beat Cooper, I was 21 years old. 1961. 40-something plus years, I'm still being hounded by these words of these moronic writers in Britain that Joe Bugner is a refugee. He is not a British person.
So let it go. Let that anger go, Joe.
No, Stephen, you're not listening. The arrogance and the confidence comes from me facing Tom, Dick or Harry and knowing the fact that there's not a human being on this planet I fear, not one. So when you say to me where I get this arrogance, that comes from confidence of knowing that when I lift my hands up, you better run or be prepared to get hurt.
Yeah, but there's also, Joe, and the reason I asked you your age, as we all get older,
You may have, I haven't. If you flew me over to England right now for the big boxing show tonight, you'd say, my God, that boy's ready to make a comeback.
but as we get older, being the best at things and saying out loud that you are the greatest on this planet and all that kind of stuff, that's the talk of a 20 or 30 year old. You want to be a more rounded individual, don't you? You want to care about people and respect other people and not tell people that they're not great. And you want to value your friends and people you're talking to as much as anywhere else. I'm just wondering, have you let that old boxer go in you?
No, once you do that, you're finished in life. You might as well go and bury yourself in a 6-foot grave if that's what you want, or have yourself.
So, what's life about to you now? What's important to you in life?
What is important to me now is that I would love to be, which will never happen. I would love to be accepted by the so-called British media to say, irrespective of how we punished Bugner for all these stinking years, we do accept the fact that he is a British representative. When you read my book, Joe Bugner, My Story, you will see what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to get myself free from this horrible feeling of being absolutely thrown away to the side. Like, almost like, oh, yeah, well, he achieved all that. Yeah, but, you know, not yeah, but, yeah, it's bullshit. What it is, it's the reality and the facts of life. I went to England. I was given an opportunity. I grabbed it. I became the world heavyweight champion.
But is it not more, now that you're in your 60s, Is it not more important to you? Are other things in life not more important to you? Your family, your health, being charitable to other people, rather than the British media telling you you're great and you hearing from other people you're great. You know, let that go.
You know, it's amazing. Somebody who hasn't achieved anything, you know, you're wonderful. I tell you why. Because until you've been there and you've been in my shoes, you will never, ever know what I went through back in England. I mean, I do respect and like my family in a certain way. I mean, I do respect and love my wife of 36 years, Marlene. I mean, of course I do. I have love for a lot of people, but unfortunately, they're not in England. The ones, you know, it's amazing. Australia has accepted me wholeheartedly. They even called me in my very first comeback fight in 1986, Aussie Joe. And to this moment, I can see British fans who have flown into Australia just for a holiday. They see me in the street and say, oh, Joe, how are you? And Australians are complaining. They said, no, that's Aussie Joe. And they understand. So you understand, it's very easy for you to say, well, why don't I let go? Let go of what? What they have punished me for 40 years?
Let go of needing other people to like you, of needing other people to tell you you're great. You've told yourself you're great many times in this interview.
Stephen, you're wrong. One thing I do not give a crack about is what people think of me, because I told you for 40-odd years I've been punished for no reason. So whether they say, oh, Joe Bugner's a lot of nonsense, or a lot of crap, he talks a lot of this, that doesn't matter to me, because you know where it comes from? UK.
Boxing's an interesting sport, isn't it? Because the psychology around it and having your head in the right place and keeping yourself sane is just as important as the physicality of it. And early in your career, one of your opponents, of course, died from brain injuries soon after you beat him in a match. Did that affect you for the rest of your career?
You know, funny.
This is Regis, wasn't it?
His name was Ulrich Regis. He was an African boy, and you're right. And you know, I blamed the referee for that fight from the day it happened, because I kept turning to him during the fight, and he allowed the fight to go on for 10 rounds. And this poor man, tough as he wasn't tough enough to beat death, because he allowed him to get pummeled from pillar to pillar corner. And this fight was, by the way, at York Hall in London. And all I'm just merely saying is, of course it affects you, because you know something, when you're begging the bloody referee to please stop the fight, this is you shut up, Bugner, get back or I'll disqualify you. And you say, well, hang on, you imbecile in my mind. So he said, this poor man is getting pummeled from pillar to pillar, and says, and you're telling me you're going to disqualify? Anyway, you're right, about 4 or 5 hours later, that poor man died. And you know what, I was only 18 or 19, I'm not quite sure, but I told Andy Smith, my manager then, I said, I don't want that money. I said, please send this money that I received then. I think it was about £150 or something. I said, send it to the poor family. I said, because I don't want to touch it. I said, this bloody referee, this poor man, anyway, it does bring back memories.
What I'm wondering is, I know that you suffered from depression when you moved to the United States. Was his death linked to your depression?
Oh, no. I mean, you must understand, I mean, when I moved to America, I was 25, in 1975, and all I can tell you is that the fight I can remember, because he never won a round, this poor man, never won one round, and this creature, this referee, would not stop it.
Because
I think Cooper was sitting at ringside with Harry Carpenter, and the two of the morons of British boxing, one the commentator and the other one, of course, we know who he was. So all I'm just merely saying is that they were talking such nonsense because I watched the fight afterwards on television.
It's pretty distasteful and unnecessary for you to constantly call these people morons, isn't it?
Why?
Harry's not around anymore
Who cares? God, we all die eventually, Steve. I mean, don't put a thing on him to say, oh, my God, he's gone on to the next plane. What? Who cares? When he was alive, mate, he was no different to any person who was knocking somebody else. And so was Cooper. Cooper never forgave me one. I saw him 2.5 years ago before he died, and he kept saying, oh, yeah, well, Joe knows who won the fight. He said, yeah. I said, I did. And you know what I mean? I mean, well, if this is the attitude of British sportsmen, hang up the glove and walk away, because you're going to be nothing but a useless, minging, whinging nobody.
And, of course, you're the greatest.
No, no, furthest from the bloody truth, my son.
I think you've told us many times during this interview.
Muhammad Ali, Steve, Muhammad Ali is the greatest and will always be the greatest. And next to him, in my opinion, is Smoking Joe Frazier. I had the privilege of fighting both of them. And you know something? When I fought Smoking Joe at Earl's Court in London in 1973, the house came alive. Earl's Court came alive, and it was fabulous. Because nobody could say a damn thing about Joe Bugner not having a crack or having a go. Muhammad Ali, of course, as you know, I boxed him twice, yeah. And he was the most ultimate boxer on the planet.
Bugner's left eye is now half closed. Ali getting to it with the right. Once again, Bugner got away from the ropes in a hurry that time. He's fighting viciously, desperately. Showing no signs of putting him away, as he said he would do. Good right by Joe Bugner. Bugner's backing off, but he got out of those ropes.
What's it like, Joe, trying to adjust to life after you've hung up the gloves? What's it like when you can't fight anymore?
I have been very, very lucky. I have literally gone around the world a couple of times already, and what I have done is that I've been invited to different countries, including Hong Kong, back to Kuala Lumpur, and I do talks. I go around and do incentive talks.
Yes.
And the beauty about it was that in America, it was huge. And, of course, people want to hear about Muhammad Ali and Smoking Joe. And as we know, Smoking Joe has passed away a few years ago. But Ali is the ultimate of all. And I'm the only person who literally can put two and two together and talk about Muhammad Ali as the greatest of all. And Americans love it. And you know what's incredible? Frank Sinatra was one of my biggest fans, and I never knew that. And I happened to tell Frank Sinatra at Caesar's Palace, I said, Mr. Sinatra, I said, there's one of the greatest fighters who's walking down there. His name is the Brown Bomber. He said, Joe Louis. And he said, oh, God, Joe Louis. I said, so anyway, I walked over with Sinatra, and I said to Sinatra, now, you can take this to the bank, because it's as true as I say this. I said, Mr. Sinatra, we can't have the greatest fighter of all time, of his era, walking around shaking hands for a few dollars. And, you know, within the next time I came back, he was walking around in a beautiful suit, and he was actually put on the payroll of over $1,000 a week. Now, this was back in the early 70s.
Wow.
So I thought to myself, wow, I mean, if Frank Sinatra can do that, that is phenomenal.
What? Why tell your story now, Joe?
Well, because I think it's about time some of the people realise that all the stuff that was written about me was absolute nonsense.
No matter what's written in the paper, Joe, I think you should do
more. No, this is not the paper. This is my book. This is my autobiography.
I know that, but whatever's written about you, I think you should do more interviews like this, because when you actually hear you talk, I think people will be able to work out for themselves just what type of person you are. And it's when they hear you, you know.
Steve, I'm emotional. I get very emotional about my bloody country back in England, mm-hmm. because when I took my wife there the very first time, I'm talking about my wife Marlene, I said we wanted to have the most beautiful time, and you know what? I ended up in court. And all I'm just really saying is that, you know, I get emotional about a lot of things.
Yeah. Can I just at the end of this interview, and thank you so much for talking to me. The book is out now. I'm sure people will find it very interesting indeed. It's called Joe Bugner, My Story, about your life in and out of the boxing ring. And Joe, can I just make one final observation before we leave?
You see,
when you said to me during this interview that I've never done anything great, let me just tell you, I've got a family who loves me. I love them, right? And I've got an ordinary job, and I'm happy in life. Do you know what? Don't tell me I haven't done anything great, because you've no right to.
Quite right. You know what's even better, Steve? You have done something great in your life. You've interviewed me.
Thanks a lot. Lovely to talk to you, Joe.